Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. You're with George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome to Tuesday. I hope your week's shaping up well. Now, Russia and Ukraine are in the news again. Ukraine is planning its big spring surge already, and some of it's actually been leaked by Bild. And what they're saying is that Ukraine is planning an offensive against Lugansk and Zaporozhye on their way to Crimea. Lugansk is quite a distance away from Crimea and Zaporozhye, for that matter. Now, what they're planning on doing is coming from the north and making a sweep south along the border. What this would do for Ukraine, if they could pull it off, is cut off road access other than the Crimean bridge to Crimea and access to Donbass altogether. Now, this is really unrealistic, and it's problematic for a couple of reasons. One, as I said, Ukraine doesn't have the forces or the equipment, so where's it going to come from? Which makes it seem like, you know, it's coming from NATO sources, so this is disinformation to a large degree. Now, if they did this surge, it would, and they were successful, it would take them right by my house. So if that's what they're planning on, this is what they did in 2014, by the way. In 2014, it worked out really well because no one was actually prepared. No one was ready at that point. And they actually were able to move overland undetected very, very quickly. And they did it within a few days. Now, this time around, I just don't see it happening. Now, there are reports right now that there was a drone attack on a Russian train carrying missiles. And this is being reported in Western news, but I haven't seen any confirmation on it. News coming out of Ukraine is, at the very, very best, it needs to raise an eyebrow in terms of its credibility. So we're waiting for confirmation on that. The biggest thing in the news is that Russian Su-35s were scrambled to meet two B-52 strategic bombers over the Baltic Sea on Monday. This was at Russia's border. Now, this is crazy because two B-52s and this confrontation lasted about 37 minutes. And Washington's reason for this, what they're saying is, well, Russia was flying Tupolev Tu-95 MS bombers, which are capable of carrying nuclear weapons, in the Sea of Japan. And they're saying that that is an escalation, but this, quite frankly, isn't true. When you look past the headline, just like the U.S., just like Britain flies planes, Russia regularly flies them over international waters in the Arctic, the North Atlantic, and the Pacific. And it's the same thing as the U.S. sending aircraft carriers all over the place. So using this as a reason for the escalation, and that is a huge escalation. These B-52s are nuclear bombers. So where does this put us? We haven't seen this since the height of the Cold War. And that, quite frankly, that's what makes it crazy. So you have this as the fallout from Russia taking down that drone and insulting Joe Biden's feelings by the way they did it. This is a result of that. Let's escalate and send bombers. Now, suppose that they went into Russian airspace and not just next to it. You know, my thoughts are the Russians would have tried to escort them out. And if they kept going in, after a certain point, it's just target and shoot down. That's how crazy this is. Are we going to get there? Honestly, and this is what's really, really crazy sad about it. It's an election season, so we don't know. A wartime president in the U.S. has always been elected, reelected. It is the one free in to the big seat in the White House. And Joe Biden really doesn't have anything else going for him other than destroying the world to get there. And that's, quite frankly and sadly, where we are with this right now. Now, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have news with Dee Dee Denslow, and we'll see you in a few minutes.
Stay up to date through your workday.
I stream it at my desk.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. We've got TNT talk show host and producer Dee Dee Denslow with us. Dee Dee, what is going on in the world today?
Yeah, I'm giving you a kind of a different story than Ukraine and Russia. Biden is to release COVID intelligence. A newly enacted law will still allow for redactions to keep most highly classified information under wraps. U.S. President Joe Biden has signed a bill that directs the federal government to declassify material related to the genesis of the COVID-19 pandemic, with the White House suggesting potential leaks between the virus and the high security research lab in China in Wuhan. Biden put his name to the legislation on Monday night after it breezed through both chambers of Congress without opposition earlier this month. The law requires the Office of the Director of National Intelligence to release information on the origins of the health crisis and states that a declassified report must be forwarded to lawmakers within 90 days. We need to get to the bottom of COVID-19 origins to help ensure we can prevent future pandemics, Joe Biden said, adding that his office would continue to review all classified information related to the pandemic, including any potential links to the Wuhan Institute of Virology, a major Chinese laboratory. However, while Biden noted that the intelligence community would share as much of that information as possible, he also invoked his power to protect against the disclosure of information that would harm national security, indicating some records would have to remain secret until confirming that the president has signed the bill on Monday. The White House refused to reveal whether Biden supported the measure. So, it looks like they're still pushing the Wuhan story now, something that was considered a conspiracy. They're doing their investigation into whether this was the genuine origin of the pandemic outbreak. However, it's quite likely when this report is finally put together and put out to the public, it's going to have a lot of black lines through certain elements of the text as it is redacted and some of that information hidden from view from the public. This story comes actually out at the same time. Sorry, go on. Yes, George.
What's funny about that is that the information, the intelligence community guide that they're going to lean on, came out with all this in March 2020. He worked for Fauci. And he already laid out everything that they're supposedly going to be looking at. So Biden doesn't have any reason to redact anything. And, you know, that's the thing. He actually laid out the why this was Wuhan. So, you know, if they've already done that, what would be the big deal now? You see what I'm asking, the nature of the question?
Yeah. I mean, the information, like you said, the information is actually already all out there. That's what you're saying. And there's no reason for the Biden administration to redact any element of the official White House report. I do apologize about the noise in the background, George. I've got decorators above me. Yeah, I think that the Biden want to try and distance themselves or keep themselves as far away as possible from this story. But in my notes to you, I am actually now beginning, and I have said this to you before, George, beginning to question whether the Wuhan Virology Lab was actually the origin of this virus. There were military games in Wuhan before the outbreak was sort of noticed or declared back in September, where there were American military and various other personnel from militaries around the world taking part in a sporting event. And there's also rumors that this virus or this illness was detected in 2019 at a much earlier date, including in the USA in Fort Detrick. So I'm a little bit suspicious when all of a sudden everywhere people are saying, oh, it was the Wuhan lab after all. I'm a little bit suspicious of that narrative, particularly when all the mainstream media are reporting upon it. And even the White House is admitting that this looks like the most likely cause when they had always denied it. I can't help but be suspicious, George.
Well, you know, the virus itself, the actual pathogen, was at Barrick Labs in North Carolina. Wuhan was a partner of them and Echo Health Alliance. So all three of them together were studying it. When the whole funding of the gain of function funding got stopped by Obama, they moved their research to Wuhan. So yes, it has an American origin, you know, on that sense. But the military games with the Fort Detrick personnel, when you look at the timeline and you look at latency and you look at RO factors, which is the rate of transmission, the military games are just over a month too early to be a causal factor. If somebody came that was sick already, you would have seen COVID presented a month earlier because the latency was like 1 week at the very, very beginning. So all of that, I think, was just to throw everybody off the fact that this came as a result of, one, Dr. Fauci funding it, okaying it. Two, Wuhan not being prepared. They were screaming for funds from NIH to build security for a level 4 biolab that weren't in place. They didn't have the security, biosecurity that was necessary for that, for the lab. And this was already pushed on them because Obama cut the funding at Barrick. And, you know, what you said about it, you know, 2019, 2020, I know somebody that got COVID-19 in 2019 in the United States. They were tested for it afterwards, after COVID became a thing, and it was identified as the coronavirus. And there were five escapes from Barrick Lab that since 2015 that no one talks about. So you have that. You have the Spanish example. Finding it there, I think, was it 2017 or 2018 that they found it? It was something like that, but it wasn't, it was in the sewers. So, yeah, you know, this has been an ongoing thing.
I think it sort of also distracts this story, as much as it is important to sort of pin down where this outbreak started, whether it was a bio lab in China and Wuhan, whether it was a bio lab in the US, whether it was a bio lab in Ukraine. I think it does sort of distract away from what has happened since in terms of the restrictions and the vaccination program and the tyrannical behavior of some of our governments. I've got another story here, and I'm only going to read the bullet points from it. And this is Ed Dowd. I'm sure you're aware of Ed Dowd, and you've been following him or aware of some of the commentary that he's making, George. He's a former BlackRock fund manager, and he's bringing attention to the surge of deaths and disabilities that has occurred since the COVID-19 campaign. a group life policyholders who are typically healthier than the general population experienced mortality spikes of 40% in 2021. He's actually been saying now that the young people, millennials, have had an increase in excess mortality, and that has now flatlined at 23%. And that staying at 23% increased mortality in that particular cohort going forward. Wow. And he's actually been able to come on to now Tucker Carlson, mainstream TV, had Ed Dowd on to discuss exactly this. And I think that we really need to, rather than going, oh, where did the virus come from? Because we can't sort of do anything about that, focus and get the information out about the harms that have resulted from the pandemic and the pandemic response, George.
Exactly. And to make sure that this doesn't happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's right now, you know, at the street level, that's what we need to concentrate on. But people do need to be held accountable for this. And, you know, let's hope they are. It's just that, you know, with Biden making this announcement and knowing that the guy that was given the mission to find out the source of COVID way back in the day when COVID was just starting to become a thing, worked directly, indirectly, his funding was provided by Fauci himself. And he's leading this intelligence community investigation. I just don't see that going anywhere. And that's why I said they've already released the information. Why don't they just acknowledge what they released already? Because it was garbage back then, it's garbage now.
And the question that's not being asked is, hey, did you lie about the origins? You know, no one in the mainstream media who are now reporting that the virus or the pandemic originated from a bio lab, no one's asking the question of, why did you lie to us back then? You must have known. Why did you lie that it wasn't from a bio lab? And no one seems to be like in uproar about it. I mean, it's as much as we've just said, we need to focus on the consequences of that virus leak. We're not in uproar about where it all come from, and we're not seeing any uproar or outrage in the mainstream media. They're just going, Christopher Wray of the FBI has now confirmed it did come from a lab after all. No one's saying, oh, Fauci's been lying to us for the last 3 years, and that
exactly.
Yeah, it's a very sort of unusual situation. But then, you know, that's the world we live in today, George. It's very, very crazy, to say the least.
Yeah, it definitely is. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get back into Russia a little bit. Darren, thank you so much for coming on today.
My pleasure, George. Speak to you tomorrow, mate.
Speak to you tomorrow. Now, at TNT Radio, we never go home, and we're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally, no matter what. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
For Voye Morich on TNT Radio.
Speaking of Mexico, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene has come out today and said, I'm proud to co-sponsor Dan Crenshaw's legislation to declare war on the Mexican cartels. We must authorize the use of military force to eliminate the thugs who are smuggling drugs and illegal aliens across our southern border, leading to crime and murder of Americans, while cartel members wait for their fate to be sealed by our great military. We will put a hit on their bank accounts by sanctioning any government that supports or allows cartels to operate. Yada, yada. There's a war going on that affects every single American, but it's not in Ukraine or the Middle East. It's on our southern border. And what concerns me is when she says, while cartel members wait for their fate to be sealed by our great military. Yeah, that's frightening because this is like uncharted territory where we're headed. U.S. special forces heading into Mexico. I mean, Peter Zeihan said this is going to become Afghanistan. So, wow. Yeah. I suppose we were here, you know, like a century ago. So we just keep revisiting history on all fronts.
For Voya Morich on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds, and they do it by the types of posts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis, by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
To follow us on Twitter,
just follow these easy steps.
Click the link on our site.
Follow me.
Follow me.
Follow me, guys.
Or search on Twitter.
TNT Radio Live. TNT Radio.
Welcome back. Now let's take a little pit stop into New York. Now, U.S. police forces on alert ahead of possible Trump arrest. This is going on across the nation in every Democratic city. Can you believe this? They're on alert for I mean, what are they on alert for? What, protesters? Just like they were in Ira with Antifa? What is it they're expecting? And I mean, this is just crazy. What they're trying to do and what Joe Biden is trying to do is drum up enough media playing this song to declare them terrorists. And can you imagine half the people in your country declared terrorists for not being terrorists, not doing acts of terrorism? And you sit there and you watch the other half applauding black bloc groups destroying private property, public property, and federal property, killing people and attacking the police force. Yeah, go team. So yeah, this is what we have coming up. This election is going to be something, and it is going to be a game changer in the United States, either way this goes. Make no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Make no qualms about this. It's just that important either way. Now, if we'll say, let's say Donald Trump doesn't get the nomination. He goes all the way through, doesn't get the nomination. And someone, you know, more Biden-esque does, then nothing's going to change. And in fact, what you see going on right now is going to escalate and be cemented into the American political fabric forever. And if it's a Republican that's doing it, it's going to be hell on earth. And it's just incredibly bad. Now, what happens if Trump gets in? He rolls it back, but Biden's done enough damage where it's going to take probably longer than one single presidency to fix the problems now. You know, as I said yesterday, you know, you shut off the oil taps, the producers, and it takes 6 or 8 months to get those refineries going again. It takes a very, very long time to get this equipment started up and running at capacity. So we'll see what that does. Now, from here to there, it behooves Biden to destroy as much of the economy as he can until just before the election and start rebuilding stuff. Now, he's already talking about rebuilding real infrastructure, just like he did under Obama. And I remember this, the first big project they were going to do in Obama-Biden's infrastructure plan was a highway that was in New Hampshire, between New Hampshire and Vermont. And I remember I was doing a project up there. I had a company and driving up that highway every day for months. And they had, Biden actually went there to kick off the project that never started. A year later, never started. A year and a half later, never started. The project never started. That's how committed they were. America's real infrastructure is so out of date, it's not funny. It's very, very dangerous, as a matter of fact, due to neglect, corruption at local and state levels, and so on and so forth. It does need a rebuild. If Biden does it, it's actually a good thing. But the way they're going about it with his Build Back Better plan, green energy, BS thing, all tied together to, you know, okay, we'll build better roads and destroy the country around it. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work well. So if Donald Trump gets the nomination and they actually run, this campaign system season is going to be a sight to behold. If you think 2016 was brutal, 2020 was brutal, that was just the warm-up for 2024, because if the Democrats lose, they lose big. All they're doing socially, all they're doing against children, against women's rights, all these things get rolled back. And it's going to play hell with the progressives, who are going to, the progressives would go out there and kill every cop they can find just to give a guy the right to pee in the ladies' room. They'll kill everybody they can find. Now, how important is the right to, involve children? How important is it for them to finally be able to push pedophile rights? Well, the story yesterday that we told about the arrest warrant against Vladimir Putin is an example of that. Can you imagine you give a sentence, time-serving pedophile, not time for good behavior. No. You cut his time in half to time served because you're the person that can write an arrest warrant against Vladimir Putin. Now, Russia responded to this, and Russia's opened a case against the ICC. Russia's investigative committee says the ICC knowingly accused an innocent person or innocent people of crimes. And a day after being accused, what did Putin do? He made a surprise visit to Mariupol, and we discussed that. He wanted to see the reconstruction going on. Now, why the other part of this is that there was no grounds for criminal liability. You're saving orphans from living inside a battle zone. That should be a crime, right? Yeah, okay. But here's the thing. Heads of state have always enjoyed absolute immunity under a 1973 United Nations Convention. Now you say, wait a minute, what if they're committing, you know, war crimes or atrocities or something, like, you know, the scale of Adolf Hitler? Do you remember the U.S. when after Saddam Hussein, and you realize that it was a group of Iraqis that actually hung Saddam Hussein because the U.S. would not be accused of going after trying this international leader like that. It was an Iraqi court. Now, here's the big important part of this for you, is that if you think all the way back to the beginning of this conflict, Zelensky disappeared for a few days until he got a phone call, until I believe it was Macron that made the phone call to Putin and asked him if he was going to target Zelensky. And Vladimir Putin said no. Why? Because there's a 1973 United Nations Convention. Heads of state enjoy immunity. You don't target the heads of state. And it was only after that that Zelensky got brave. And Zelensky started speaking out against Putin after being quiet for a few days. Zelensky said, "I'm here," after he knew he was safe. And yet, the same Zelensky is going after Vladimir Putin for protecting children, when everybody should be acknowledging the fact that he's saving these children's lives. But to do that, they'd have to also recognize the fact that I've talked about this a few times, that Ukraine has been targeting children all this time. In the city of Pervomaysk, in one of the little burbs inside the city called Golden, the Ukrainians sat on top of a hill with clear line of sight to an elementary school, and the kids were going to school, and they were shelling it. For 8 years, they did this. Every time they saw kids, they were firing their weapons. It was in line of sight. They could fire their rifles at the school. And they were trying to kill children. And where was this in media? So, you know, we've talked about this. And quite frankly, it is just this whole thing with the ICC is just freaking crazy. Now, when we go into something that is just plain scary, according to Bild, the Ukrainians are going to, receive UA rounds from the British Army. And this is according to Defense Minister Baroness Goldie, made an admission in the response to a parliamentary question from Lord Hilton. And she said the reasoning is that such rounds are highly effective in defeating modern tanks and armored vehicles. Now, Russia's already warned using depleted uranium would be considered the same as using a dirty bomb on the battlefield. And this is very, very serious, folks. And Kremlin official Konstantin Gerilov said in January, if Kiev is supplied with UA shells for NATO heavy military equipment, we'll consider this as the use of dirty nuclear bombs against Russia with all the ensuing consequences. Now, that should be all stop right there. Why? If the UK is supplying nuclear dirty bombs to Ukraine, guess who's a target? The UK just drew its entire country into the conflict in real terms. Now, will Russia respond this way? That's a question. But that should be a question in everybody's mind that lives in the UK. Doing this is opening up to a retaliatory strike directly on the British Isles. And make no bones about it. If the United States supplied a nuclear weapon for Ukraine to fire on Moscow, okay, that makes it a little clearer. We're talking about, even though it's a much smaller footprint on the battlefield than a nuke, it's not spectacular, right? What if the U.S. provided dirty bombs and they were set in Moscow? Would that be enough for a retaliatory strike on the U.S.? You bet your ass it would. And this is doing the same thing. A lot of children are being born with deformations, very, very sick. A lot of people are dying from radioactive sickness, radiation sickness in Iraq. Everywhere these depleted uranium shells are used, it becomes a nuclear disaster zone. Now, how is this for logic? We want to take over our country, so we're going to fire depleted uranium rounds all over the place, even though we own that part of the country. So what does it say? It means the people in that particular area are meaningless to Ukraine. The idea that you would use this type of thing on your own soil is, I'm sorry, this is insanity. Unless, of course, you wanted to get rid of groups of people. You were trying to attrit your own populations. And that is what Ukraine's trying to do. That is what part of this is about. All of this is great news for Ukraine. The longer the war goes on, the more civilians die, the more land that's freed up, because Ukraine's already been sold. And the investors, which outweigh the humanitarian military aid from the US and Europe by about 8 to 1, they want to make their money back, and they can't do that in areas where there's heavy populations. So Ukraine doesn't need a big population anymore. The whole goal is to turn it into a green energy hub. Think of Ukraine as a giant solar panel or wind farm or hydrogen production facilities. They're going to suck all the water out of the Dnieper and use it to cool down the solar panels, the windmills, or make hydrogen. Take your pick. Take your pick. But they can't do that if, well, there's people there that are going to protest it, stand against it. A government can be elected that's going to reverse it. Or people figure out that their own water sources are poisoned. Not too happy about that. Maybe they'll have another Maidan. So you remove them, consolidate the population, and Ukraine may well be, if it survives the conflict, the world's first adventure into these 15-minute cities. See, Zelensky will do anything and everything. It really doesn't matter to him. He'll sell his everything down to his children. He'll rent them to you. And that's when we look out and roll this out back into Europe and back into the United States. And simply put, that's all you really need to do to know the future that all the powers that be right now have planned. It's not very, very pretty for everybody, for anybody. Now, why are they so upset about Russia and China getting together? And China's president saying that Vlad Putin is my best friend. Now, did you know that Joe Biden actually tried to call and while the Chinese president was meeting with Russia's president, he tried to get the Chinese president online. What do you think the answer was? Talk to my secretary, set up an appointment, have my, you know, my people will call your people, was the response, more or less. Russia and China are predictably tired of what's going on. Now, the U.S., after setting China up to be the economic power that it is, the technological power it's becoming, is going to cry about it because it stopped manufacturing, it stopped research or slowed it down, and was offshoring all this. It makes you wonder how much military hardware, and believe me, none of it's supposed to be, but how much military hardware has Chinese components in it? Now that's a question. Can you imagine the American war machine powered by Chinese microchips? It's a distinct possibility. And I believe that they're, you know, I'm actually pulling that, it was a couple of years ago. I believe there was one or two stories that were complaining that's what Obama did. And he cut a deal and China got hold of chips, technology. It was either Obama or Biden that did that. So they had the military grade stuff. So, hey, why not sell that back too, right? I mean, why not? And then, you know, you put a competitor in a position where you can't compete with them anymore, and then you want to complain about it. What the United States needs to do to make things right is act like a country again. Start building up its own manufacturing base again. Start building up its R&D again. And stop being that little whiny bitch out in left field, whining at the world, and they're going to take their bat and ball and go home at the drop of a hat, or what, sig their dog in the world? You know, there was a time when other countries, Russia and China included, looked up to the United States as, I wouldn't go as far as George Bush Sr. saying a city on the hill. I think that's a little bit much, and I think we can agree on that at any point. But as an example, okay, a way to go, not just capitalism per se, you know, we're talking about societal freedoms. But without the responsibility that goes along with that, look what happened. That experiment in the United States. Look at it. If there's a country that's a major country that is shockingly less free, I'd like to hear about it. Now, we're going to take a quick break. And we'll see you in a few minutes. I'm George Elias, and this is TNT Talk Radio.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Apart from their hatred of Western civilization and American exceptionalism, and those of us who celebrate them, the defining characteristic of the globalist left is psychological projection. They accuse us of doing that which they themselves are guilty. So it comes as no surprise that Manhattan's racist, Soros-backed DA, while reducing violent felonies to misdemeanors, is attempting to charge President Donald Trump with a felony. Indeed, the exact same felony that federal prosecutors found no credible evidence justifying a prosecution. And how do you pursue such a dangerous non-felon in order to bring him before a political show trial tribunal? Why, of course, with your jackbooted thugs in the FBI and the top to bottom corrupt Department of Justice, including the Joint Terrorism Task Force, and corrupt local cops who refused to abide by their oath to uphold and defend the Constitution. As if the world needed any more evidence of their desperation after the debunking of Russiagate, the Mueller investigation, impeachment 1.0, impeachment 2.0, and the unlawful raid on Mar-a-Lago, the arrest of President Donald John Trump will go down in the annals of history as the exact moment when America became a banana republic. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg bought the 2020 election with hundreds of millions of dollars in funding that likely handed the White House to Joe Biden last year, according to a new analysis. Researcher William Doyle of the Caesar Rodney Election Research Institute, CRERI, said election funding funneled by Zuckerberg and his wife through two nonprofits significantly increased Joe Biden's vote margin in key swing states. The Center for Technology and Civic Life, CTCL, and the Center for Election Innovation and Research, CEIR, passed a staggering $419.5 million of Zuckerberg's money into local government elections offices. The research found the massive influx of funds essentially created a high-powered concierge-like get-out-the-vote effort for Biden that took place inside the election system. Rather than attempting to influence it from the outside, appears to have generated enough additional votes for Biden to secure Electoral College victory in 2020.
No propaganda, no lies, and definitely no BS. You're with George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. Now, we're talking about dirty bombs. We're talking about elections and the fact that they go hand in hand for 2024 is the scariest proposition on earth. And, you know, if we talked like this, gosh, 2 years ago, I would have called it crazy. And, you know, here's the thing. I cover a lot of very, very deep, and it gets into really wild topics. You know, honestly, yeah, okay, I'll admit that much. But if there's a guy on the planet that actually hates conspiracy theory stuff, it's me. The facts are very often a lot wilder than the fiction, any fiction that you can write about stuff. An example, we talked last week about Jacob Frank. I'm sorry, the actual facts in history are a lot wilder than any conspiracy theory you could come up with. Why? Because this history was so wild, historians have to hide it. When have you heard about Jacob Frank before? Or he had the fact that he had that much import in terms of history and politics in the world today. French Revolution would have never happened without him. He actually had a hand in the American Revolution trying to get a foot in the colonies. Broke Judaism in half, tried to kill half the Jews, and did a good job with it. His people ran the Holocaust camps after they converted to Greek Catholicism. And it's just crazy, but that is the actual history. And you cannot tell me that any conspiracy theory or grade B movie, I mean, imagine you go up to a producer, hey, I've got a story for you, here it is. And they're like, George, that's not going to, no one's going to believe this. No one's going to believe this. And here's the thing, at the time, all this was happening, the people it was happening to didn't believe it either. They couldn't. It was just too wild. And that's what made it easy to turn the lights out on them, so to speak. And all the way through the Holocaust, when the Holocaust actually started for real, No one believed it was happening, including the people it was happening to, which made them easy targets. No one could get their heads around something like this. So if you, you know, without the physical documentation, and especially by the Germans themselves, the Holocaust would have been a non-sale as a story. And that's crazy. When they went out of their way to hide the story of the Frankists and the Sabbateans, they made a way for them to quietly make their way through history under different guises. And their career apostates, that's what they do. So going from one thing to the other, being one thing or another, it's a holy act to them. It's great. It's what they do. And history helped them out. According to history, the Frankists died in 1817 or something, which just wasn't the case. And I'll give you a real pointed why. The actual first political leader in the first attempt, the absolute first attempt to set up a Ukrainian republic, was very proudly a Frankist. Yeah, that's weird. So we're living in a time that our time frame is like that. And it should really make it pop to you what it is you're living in interesting times, and why that saying, may you live in interesting times, is such a curse. We're in interesting times. It means this whole wagon train can go in any direction all of a sudden, instead of tracking along something familiar. We know where we're going. We're going into the future. And all of a sudden, we may end up going off a cliff. And that's a reality. Or we maybe end up being in a long slog uphill. Or sliding and flipping the cart over, going downhill. And there's a lot of dangers lurking right now. And in interesting times, that there are. But it's something that if we look at it thoughtfully, and we can push through it and past it, or stop it dead in its tracks. You know, I think you'll agree by now, after the last 3 or 4 years, that going on a path that's progressing, that you can see where you're going, is a lot better than trying to figure out blindly where you're being taken and not knowing if they're going to end the world, so totally radically change the world that nobody knows what it'll be, which is a scariest proposition of all, or bringing it back to something that has a little bit of stability so people can maybe plan their lives and futures out. And I remember back in 2009, it was about 8 months before I left the United States, and going into a bank, talking to the bank manager, and a crash had happened. And her husband was an executive, over 30 years, was going to retire in a few months when that crash wiped everything out. They were really well off until the crash with his retirement because he was investing it. But those investments, which he made safely and carefully, it was all taken. The bank managers got rich, traders got rich, and he was back to square one with the finances of a 20-year-old or a 22-year-old just getting out of college. That's crazy. I'm George Eliason. This is TNT Talk Radio. We'll see you tomorrow.